Shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Touchdown! Yes! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
The Rangers call! That's on 4th and 5!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami!
Good evening, Dolphins fans. How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. I am your host, Mike, on this Thursday, January the 3rd, 2019, and we got a great show for you today. Later on in the podcast, I will be joined by Safa Dean from the South Florida Sun Sentinel, the Miami Dolphins reporter for the Sun Sentinel, as we talk all things Miami Dolphins. We'll talk about the Hall of Fame snubs for Zach Thomas and Jimmy Johnson. We'll talk about head coach Adam Gase and, you know, his final weeks in Miami and what went down, as well as, you know, the head coaching search taking place right now, as well as the John Harbaugh rumors. And we have a little debate, of course, over Darren Rizzi and, you know, how serious should he be considered here to be the next Dolphins head coach. And it's an interesting topic because right now all over social media, you're seeing players who are currently on the team, as well as some players who, you know, spent time in Miami when Rizzi was here, but who are no longer here, you know, throwing their support behind Rizzi and, you know, just saying glowing things about him. And, you know, it's an interesting thing to talk about because with a special teams coach, you really don't know what philosophy they have offensively and defensively. So, you know, with Rizzi, but he has been here forever and he survived every coaching change. So me and Saf, it's sort of, you know, go over the pros and cons of hiring someone like Rizzi possibly. And, you know, I'm not sure I'm for it. Safed was more for it than me, but you'll hear about it later on in the podcast in my conversation with him. Right now, as I record this on Thursday, you know, late afternoon, evening, the Miami Dolphins are meeting with Brian Flores Thursday night into Friday, and they also will be meeting with Eric Bieniemy, I believe, on Friday. So the coaching search is starting to get underway here, and, you know, this is going to go a few weeks. And obviously there was the big John Harbaugh rumor today. You know, Harbaugh, who the heck knows? Really, the Harbaugh thing, nobody's going to know until the Ravens are out of the playoffs. Period, end of story. If the Ravens win this Sunday and they go on to, I think they would then play they could play either team, all depending on what happens with the Colts. Who knows? But if the Ravens, you know, win this week, you know, that's going to drag on. And then you have to sort of weigh the pros and cons of how long do we want to go without a head coach. And if Harbaugh's our one, and we got this other guy as a two, but he's about to sign with someone else, do we want to risk losing him because we're waiting around for Harbaugh? So there's a lot of factors there with the Harbaugh rumors. We'll get into that more probably next week once we know what's going on with the Ravens. Vic Fangio of the Chicago Bears, he has an interview with Miami on Monday. He's meeting with Miami and the Broncos Monday. And Vic Fangio, in true old school football coach form, pretty much said today to the Chicago media, he's doing no preparation for these interviews with Miami and the Broncos. And his focus is 100% on the playoff game this week, which I'm sure it is. But I'm not sure if I totally believe Vic when he says he's doing no preparation at all for these interviews Monday. I'm sure he's doing a little, but, you know, that's what you want to hear from your head coach. That's what you want to hear from someone who could potentially be your head coach, I should say, in Vic Fangio. You know, he's focused on the game he's got this Sunday, but he's saying he's doing no preparation at all. But the thing with Vic is, you know, in Chicago, Matt Nagy was sort of in this spot last year, so Matt Nagy understands the spot Vic Fangio's in. But, so the search is starting to get underway, and this should be interesting to say the least. Miami has interviews set with 6 people. The 6 names, as I said, were Brian Flores, Eric Bieniemy, Vic Fangio, Chris Richard, Darren Rizzi, and Mike Munchak. I'm not sure if Mike Munchak is much of a fit here, but he will be meeting with the Dolphins. That is one name out there. So what I'm going to do right now is take a quick break. And after the break, I'll be joined by Safed Dean from the South Florida Sun Sentinel as we talk all of the latest Miami Dolphins news and rumors and cover everything. And we get to hear it from Safed Dean, who's in the locker room, who's at the press conferences, who lives at the training facility and covers the team each day. So everyone sit tight and we'll be back after this.
Sinbad Sports is the number one sports memorabilia company in South Florida and the number one place to go get authentic Miami Dolphins signed memorabilia. Sinbad Sports has had the likes of Albert Wilson, Kiko Alonso, Frank Gore, Jakeem Grant, Rashad Jones, Ricky Williams, and Cam Wake in for recent autograph signings. So when you're in South Florida, go ahead and visit Sinbad Sports at 1976 South University Drive, Davie, Florida. Tell them DolphinsTalk.com say you.
Joining me on the DolphinsTalk.com hotline is Safid Dean from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Safid, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Good. And we are recording this just after they made the announcement for the 2019 Hall of Fame finalists and two Miami Dolphins players, or one in Zach Thomas and the former head coach of the Dolphins, Jimmy Johnson, did not make the cut. What are your thoughts on this?
Man, Zach Thomas continues to get snubbed, huh?
I know, he does.
To be honest, he hasn't really. This is his first time as a finalist. You know, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, they have over 100 names that they cut down to 25, and this cut today was for the next 15 players and coaches who are going to be selected from when the Super Bowl happens in a month. So Zach Thomas didn't make the cut, and I think it's a huge snub, especially when you look over the years that his resume is pretty much really, really the same to Brian Urlacher, who was the first ballot Hall of Famer, I believe, last year. You know, Thomas played two more games than Urlacher. He was a five-time All-Pro, where Urlacher was a four-time All-Pro. Thomas went to seven Pro Bowls. Urlacher went to eight. Pretty much the same across the board there. I know Urlacher probably has a little bit more lust because he was a Defensive Player of the Year, and he also won a Super Bowl. Yeah. So Zach Thomas has those things against him, but I think the snub, man, I think one day he'll definitely get in. It's always so hard, man, because the Hall of Fame class, they take from 15 and they only let about 4 to 8 people in. So yeah. Zach Thomas could be waiting.
Yeah, and at least now he is he's more on their radar as he made it as a finalist this year. So I think for him, that's good. It means he's moving further in the process. So I think that helps. And about last year, this time I had on Armando Salguero, and we spoke about this. And the one thing he said is he thought – Urlacher, the fact that he played in big postseason games with Chicago in front of the whole country helps him a lot more than it helps someone like Zach, who never really had that big run in the playoffs. So I think that's the one big difference in the eyes of the voters. Urlacher was always front and center in the playoffs for at least a few year stretch there, where Zach Thomas was maybe in the first round and out or not in at all. So I think that really helps him.
Yeah, I mean, Zach Thomas was probably one of the best Dolphins from when he played, 96 to 07. The Dolphins made the playoffs, you know, in the 90s and that part of his career. But from 2000 on, they haven't made the playoffs since, like, 2003. So he was only in the playoffs twice in this millennium.
I know.
The Dolphins have been only in the playoffs three times in this whole millennium, if you think about it, if you add Adam Gase's first year. So, yeah, I think the Big Ten games do hurt Zach Thomas' profile, but at the end of the day, man, these guys, these careers and these guys, everybody kind of knows each other. They know the kind of player Zach Thomas was, and they'll definitely be sure to let him in at some point. And I think Jimmy Johnson will also get that nod, too, at some point, too. His NFL career, I think he had about 7 or 8 years as a coach, a couple with the Dolphins, a couple with the Cowboys. But, you know, he's got 2 Super Bowl rings.
That's a crime he's not in. It's a crime.
Yeah. It's, you know, there's 23 coaches in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. 6 of them have fewer Super Bowls than Jimmy Johnson. A couple coaches have 1. A couple coaches have none.
Mark Levy has
2, and he's not even in the mix.
Mark Levy has none, and he lost to Jimmy Johnson twice in the Super Bowl. How he is in and Jimmy Johnson is not, I will never understand. That is the biggest crime of all right now in the Hall of Fame. Jimmy Johnson, even you can actually probably hand him credit for the third one that they won the Cowboys because he built the team, even though he wasn't there. But even if you put that aside, he won 2 against Marv Levy, and Marv Levy's in. Look, it's nice to make the Super Bowl, but, you know, you got to win the game. You know, winning the game matters. So, yeah, that one I'll never get. Let's move on to the Miami Dolphins. Obviously, a ton of news since last week's game and the loss to the Bills. First off, head coach Adam Gase. Are you surprised they let him go?
Am I surprised? No. And it's kind of funny because, you know, during the season, and just it kind of just matters after if they win or lose a game on Sunday, where you think Gase is going to stand. They win a game, you're like, okay, I think this guy can, you know, last around for another year. They lose the game, you're like, I don't know. I wonder if he's still going to be sticking around. And sure enough, the way they ended the season, man, was a recipe for disaster for Adam Gase. And I think more so along the lines, too, is you have to look at the things that kind of contributed to everything and why Adam Gase was fired. He stuck onto Ryan Tannehill a little bit too long. He did draft a quarterback to compete with Ryan Tannehill and deal with questions about, you know, the rookie behind Tannehill for the 3 years he was Dolphins coach. And with his devotion to Tannehill, he also began to lose the players in the locker room. There's a lot of players in the locker room who were not in favor of Gase towards the end of the season. And that didn't help also when, you know, Brock Osweiler is saying, hey, I kind of want to compete for the starting job too with Tannehill out. So you have two of Gase's guys kind of, you know, vying for the quarterback job here. And, you know, they're not good enough to compete in the NFL. The guys in the locker room know it. They're just going to continue to put their head in the ground and work. I think those things contributed the most to that. And I think Stephen Ross finally signaled for a rebuild when he fired Coach on Monday. You know, him and Chris Greer, appointing Chris Greer to the general manager position, you're signaling for a rebuild, which just means, you know, you're trying to tank in 2019, I believe, and you're trying to look for a quarterback in 2020. That's not to say the Dolphins can't, you know, pull a fast one, all of us, and draft a quarterback in 19. I'm not sure how the Dolphins feel about the 19 class compared to the 2020 class, which is significantly deeper and significantly better at the top. But with all those things, you know, you can't have Adam Gase around for another year. He have, you know, for him to turn in a 3-13 year or 4-1 year, and then, you know, wonder if he's going to be around to coach the next quarterback. Adam Gase knows a tanking season wouldn't be good for his resume and his record. And the Dolphins kind of just had to leave a move now, and had to make a move now. And I think the next coach is kind of in a lame duck situation here, in a sense, because you're waiting this 1 year out. You're hoping to draft a quarterback at some point in the next 2 years. Will that coach be around to continue that? Will that coach have enough of, you know, the Dolphins' confidence to keep with it in year three, year four, if the rebuild doesn't take off as fast as it does with the new quarterback? So, Tom, I'm really interested to see how this all unfolds in the next couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the next coach will have a little bit of a honeymoon, but not too much, obviously. I think 1 year is about it. And, you know, even that in this league, as we saw this year with Arizona, you never really know. Back to Gase for one more question. Obviously, well, here's two more. One, if they would have won last weekend at the Bills, do you think there's a chance he might hold on to his job? Or was that game, because it meant nothing, really didn't play a big factor in this? And my second question is, you know, we heard the reports, like you mentioned, that there was some rift with some of the players. How many? Nobody knows. How big of a rift was there? Was it, I mean, if you had to take a shot in the dark, was it like half the team? Was it a third of the team? 20%? How many players just had some sort of issue with him that where they weren't on the same page?
All right, since I'm Superman here, I'm going to try to attack both your questions with one answer right here. Ready?
Yeah, let's go.
So the Dolphins fell apart against Indianapolis, and I think that was probably the beginning of the nail in the coffin for the Dolphins this season.
Okay.
I think if the Dolphins – I personally think the Dolphins, if they could have, they would have tried to lose the Bills and Patriots games they won at home. And if you look at that point, after that, they didn't win after the Miami Miracle. They lost three straight games to end the season. And not to say that the Dolphins are trying to tank by any means. They won those Bills games, the Bills games and the Patriots game, fair and square. But I think they were checked out after that Colts game. That Colts game was really, really big in their playoff hopes, because Indianapolis was one of the teams that were, you know, same record at the time, kind of ahead of them at the time in the mix for the playoff spot. I think that's when they all kind of collectively checked out a little bit, outside of the Patriots game, where it ended up being their best game of the season. And you're wondering, why can't this team play like that for the rest of the year? But I think after going up to Minnesota, I think they all kind of knew that just that slow start at the beginning of that game, Buffalo, not starting off really against the Jaguars outside of that first touchdown. All these guys were kind of checked out, man, slowly but surely. And they were all kind of waiting for the season to be over. Because they knew at that point, you know, even with the Patriots win, you know, their playoff fate was in the hands of a lot of other teams. You had the Colts, you had the Titans, you had the Ravens, you had the Steelers. You needed a lot of other teams to do some things for you to be in the mix on top of you winning. And once it got out of their own hands, I think that's when they started to check out a little bit.
Yeah. All right. That makes a I mean, obviously, because those last three games, they didn't just lose. They got – I mean, it was embarrassing. Some of those games, they didn't even have 200 yards offense, and they just looked like they just were really overmatched on the field. So that makes a lot of sense. Chris Greer now has all the power. Chris Greer runs the show. Do you think it's wise to make him both sort of the VP and GM? And or is this okay, do you think, because now it's like one guy, he runs the ship, and everything stops with him sort of. What do you think about the new structure of having Chris Greer pretty much call all the shots?
I am in favor of having a more unified front and having just one person, you know, kind of responsible for all these decisions. You know, with the last regime, you had Greer controlling the draft. You had Mike Tannenbaum controlling free agency and signing players. And then you had Adam Gase controlling the 53-man roster and, you know, signing players off the practice squad, claiming people off waivers, things like that. And then all three of them together kind of coalesced this team of Dolphins players that made the playoffs in 16 and then regressed in 17 because of missing Ryan Tannehill, and then 18 not being able to put it all together with Tannehill back for most of the season. Chris Greer, you know, he's been with the Dolphins franchise for 19 seasons now. If you can say one thing about Chris Greer, you can say that he hasn't had final say his whole 19 seasons here. Which means that he can make, you know, he can learn from mistakes prior GMs and VPs have made during his time here and hopefully make decisions that would better the franchise with that kind of knowledge. And also, it's kind of a hang up in a situation for the Dolphins now, too, because say you want to coach like John Harbaugh, say you want to coach like Jim Harbaugh, those two guys would probably prefer to have a little bit of more power in franchise decisions, roster decisions, free agent signings. That you essentially gave Chris Greer, and that Stephen Ross handed Chris Greer. I think that could work in a certain extent, just because Chris Greer is, you know, he's a really nice guy. He's really amenable. Being a first-time guy with all his head, this kind of power, I think he'd be willing to listen to the coach and see what the coaches want and wants to make more of a collaborative decision, which will ultimately fall back on him. I think that works in a sense for a coach that would be willing to be okay with not having the title of having power. But I think the Dolphins are hoping that with Chris Greer, you can hopefully get past the mistakes that you made in the past, and now he's the guy that can lead you into the future.
Yep, and I think he will, because, look, he comes off very well. He comes off very well-spoken. He's smart, and he came from a football family with his father. You know, he has lived this sport his entire life, and I have a lot of confidence with him in charge here making these calls. And like you said, should they go after a bigger name guy, which was sort of my next question, I think he will be more flexible to be able to work with that. And I think having that sort of that one guy in charge sort of helps with that. And that sort of leads into the question of John Harbaugh. Obviously, there's rumors everywhere, and we're not going to know anything really until the Ravens are out of the playoffs, which it might be this week or who knows when. Are the Miami Dolphins in a position to part with anything? And whether that's a draft pick or two, whether that's a player, or even if it's like, even if they have to swap spots in round one of the draft, if they have to part with anything, are they in that type of spot to part with something for a head coach, you think, or are they really not there yet? Maybe.
I don't think you would hear the Dolphins in trade talks for John Harbaugh if they couldn't afford it to some extent. You know, there was a report out today by Pro Football Talk, which I aggregated on SunCentral.com, yep, saying that the Ravens, you know, may ask for two first round draft picks. Well, Dolphins obviously cannot do that. Yeah.
Nope.
You're hoping your first round draft pick in 2020 can draft you Tua. So Tua, who I can't say his last name, and I'm not sure I'll ever learn it until 2020, right? You know, but if the Dolphins have two first round picks, they can't make that happen. Let's say the Dolphins trade a player and get a first round pick. Maybe that's a little bit more more feasible to them, but it's still a heavy price to pay.
Oh, it's a heavy price to pay. It's gonna cost something.
It's still a heavy price to pay, yeah. Maybe a first-round pick and a later-round pick, okay. Maybe you add a player and a pick, all right. But let's get one thing straight here about John Harbaugh. You know, he wants a contract extension. He's in the second to last year of his deal. So by all means, next year he'd be a lame duck coach if he coached the Ravens, and no coach wants that. So it's up to him and the Ravens to decide if they want to stay together throughout next season and the year after that. I think the one thing that's going in the Dolphins' favor, or any team's favor that wants John Harbaugh, is the fact that, you know, the Ravens owner came out and said he thought about firing John Harbaugh beginning of, before last season. You know, the Ravens didn't make the playoffs for three straight years until they made it this year. And that was probably one of the biggest reasons why they wanted to fire John Harbaugh. If you're a coach and your owner is going out and saying that before a season where you lead your team to the playoffs, is that somebody you want to work for? That kind of, you know, that's probably something that, that lends to John Harbaugh's, you know, leverage in negotiating a deal and also negotiating his way out of Baltimore. So I think we won't know anything about the Dolphins' real interest. I think the Dolphins have significant interest in John Harbaugh. I mean, how could you not have interest in a Super Bowl winning coach? But I think we'll learn more about it after this weekend if the Ravens lose, or what might not be favorable for the Dolphins if the Ravens keep winning. If the Ravens keep winning, you kind of have to, you know, not only do the Ravens have to keep John Harbaugh, but the Dolphins have to wait longer to talk to him and kind of have to narrow in on the coaches that they're interviewing right now.
Yeah, and the one thing with Harbaugh, why I wouldn't be against it is because he's beaten the Patriots in big games. And we know for any team inside the AFC East, you have to beat the Patriots. It goes through them. And he's beaten them in big games, and he's obviously a proven winner. It comes down to compensation, and it can't be crazy. I don't think it would ever be two first-round picks. That would never happen. You might be able to part with a player and maybe get him, but it would probably be somebody who's really good. And I threw out the name today, maybe someone like Xavien Howard type, who, you know, he's coming towards the end of his deal. And if the Miami Dolphins are really in this mode of blowing it all up, and, you know, he'd be a guy that you'd hate to part with him, you really would. But, you know, someone like that maybe, but it's going to cost something. You're not going to get him for nothing. That's the thing with Harbaugh.
That's another thing about this rebuild, Mike, is that, you know, Xavien Howard, Laremy Tunsil might be the safest guy, but Xavien Howard might be your most exciting guy on your defense.
I know.
And he might be your biggest asset that could return your first round pick if you trade him.
Yep. Pico Alonso
might be a guy on the table. I'm not sure if the Dolphins want to sign Juwan James, although I think they should, because the right tackle is going to be the blind side for a left-handed quarterback you covet so much in the next draft. The Dolphins need to be really, really, really careful with the moves they make here, the players that they let go, the players they choose not to re-sign here while they do this quote-unquote rebuild, because it doesn't happen. A rebuild doesn't take 1 year. It takes a couple years.
It takes a couple.
It takes a couple years, yeah, and you can't just make rash decisions just to hope that after you get the quarterback, you're going to win immediately with it. You're not. You're going to have to set some foundational things here. You're going to have to get some defensive ends, some defensive tackles. You need some wide receivers. This team has a lot of holes before it can really compete. And obviously the biggest hole is quarterback.
Yeah, and I think the three names who the Miami Dolphins sort of have to protect at all costs would be one, Laremy Tunsil, two, Minkah Fitzpatrick, and three, Xavien Howard. And, you know, I would be hesitant to part with any of those three. And the only way I would part with any one of those three is if it does put you in a spot to get the quarterback in 2020. Otherwise, those three, I think, are pretty much untouchable. The rest of the roster, you know, open season. Open season, if there's a trade, cut, whatever you have to do. But those three really are the building blocks of this team moving forward. Let's talk about the other six names we're meeting with. Obviously, Vic Fangio, Eric Bieniemy, Mike Bunchak, Brian Flores, who I think they're meeting with tonight and tomorrow, Chris Richard, and, of course, Darren Rizzi. Do any of those names jump off the screen or just sort of jump off the page to you as someone that sort of piques your interest? And then I want to talk a little bit more about Rizzi, because I got a strong thought. It's fine that he's getting an interview, but I don't know if it's just more than that, and I don't know how much I would seriously consider him. So what are your thoughts on any of those six names, and which ones sort of pop off at you maybe?
Listen, if Darren Rizzi is listening to this podcast by any chance, there's a good chance he already just popped through all of our earphones.
I'm going to get an email in about 5 minutes.
He popped through the earphone and grabbed you on your throat, man. He's ready to bounce on you.
I know.
I think the guy that intrigues me the most is probably Robert Flores with the Patriots. And I think the reason why is the connection between him and Chris Greer. Chris Greer began as an intern with the Patriots, where his father was a longtime executive. And Brian Flores has been with the Patriots franchise for about 15 years. And now Chris Greer has been with the Dolphins for about 19 years too. So they've crossed paths at some point in New England, and I'm pretty sure they still have, you know, some kind of a standing relationship. If he's the first one in the door for the Dolphins, Eric Bieniemy. Yeah, Eric Bieniemy was supposed to be in the door today. I think he's had some other ones. His interview with the Bengals ran a little bit long today. But Flores is the first one up to bat here. And I do like that connection. I think for them to get him in the door first, I think that definitely is a little significant. I know Flores is interviewing three other teams right now. They kind of all the teams kind of mixed up because there's eight teams looking for a coach and about 30 coaches with pro, no pro, and a lot of college experience up for grabs here in the search. But he intrigues me the most because they have some experience together. They have some history together. And I think for Greer to make a hire like that, if he did pick Brian Flores, would be a comfortable hire, but something he'd be confident in. You know, for a guy like Brian Flores to wait and wait and wait behind Matt Patricia until he could be a DC for the first time this year, that speaks to something. I think coaching under Bill Belichick speaks for something too, but, you know, let's not get it twisted here. He's not Bill Belichick.
Nope.
You know, and you're going to have to, you know, you're going to want to see if that guy wants to go up against Bill Belichick for the next 3 to 4, maybe 5 years if he's a Dolphins coach. I think the biggest thing that we make a mistake of evaluating assistant coaches under guys like Nick Saban and under guys like Bill Belichick is the fact that those coaches, while they are learning from those guys, they're not those guys. I think the only successful coach really out of, you know, those two coaching trees, Saban and Belichick, is probably Jimbo Fisher, a guy covered at Florida State. Mm-hmm. Those guys don't do so well on their own. And that's not because that they don't learn enough, but, you know, they're just not those Hall of Fame kind of coaches. So I'm interested to see how Flores will pan out. I like Bemini too.
I like Eric Bemini a lot.
His name right.
I like him a lot.
He's a hard-nosed guy. You know, the Chiefs defense did pretty well too, but, you know, he's not bringing Patrick Mahomes here.
No.
I like Vic Fangio, but he's not bringing Khalil Mack here. I like Joe Philbin, but he didn't bring Aaron Rodgers here. I like Adam Gase, but he didn't bring Peyton Manning here. You know, that's probably my biggest hang up with coaches that have interviews and teams that kind of put their investor futures in these kind of coaches. That's not to say the coaches don't do great, but the coaches need to rely on really great players. And if you don't have really great players, standout players, franchise players that I love, the coaches I just named, what, you know, you're depending on coaching. And the fact is you need those kind of players on your team. The Dolphins don't have them. The Dolphins need to draft them. And maybe those players, those coaches didn't even have a say in getting those players on their team too. So I'm kind of skeptical on everybody. I'm really skeptical on everybody. I think Flores is a great option. I think the more and more I kind of see every single Dolphins player endorse Darren Rizzi, the more and more I kind of think, you know what? Yeah. It wouldn't be too bad for a rebuild.
Yeah, but here's the thing with that. And this is also happening too up in New York with the Jets as Jamal Adams is endorsing a few people. It's like, you know what? You're the players, and this isn't really your spot to pick the coach. I mean, if some of the guys who aren't on the team anymore, like Michael Thomas or Reggie Bush or Mike Pouncey, want to say nice things, that's fine. But when it comes to the guys who are on the team currently, I don't think you can listen to them because I don't think they should have a say in something like this, honestly. And to me, the two names that most intrigue me would be Eric Bieniemy, because one, he was a former player, and I think on some level that kind of matters a little, that he can maybe relate to the players a little bit more. If you were in the league for a long period of time, like he was as a player, I think he played for over 10 years. And plus, you know, it's not just him with the Chiefs. He also had a successful run with Minnesota as well. So he's done it more than one stop, granted, as a position coach and then up now as a coordinator. So he sort of intrigues me. And also Vic Fangio, just for the simple fact, he is the exact opposite of Adam Gase in every way, shape, or form, from age to side of the ball, and just probably everything you read about him, I mean, just the opposite of Gase. And it seems like maybe that's what they need, is someone who's just the exact opposite of what was just here. And Vic Fangio sort of fits that bill to a T, because there is nothing that you will compare him to with Adam Gase in any way, shape, or form with Vic Fangio. Mm-hmm. He looks like a football coach. He talks like a football coach. He's just like an old school guy who's a football coach. Never got his shot or his break. But you know what? Someone like Mike Zimmer, he never got his shot or his break till later in life either. So those two guys to me sort of the ones that are most intriguing. But yeah, I mean, honestly, who knows? It could be any one of those six names. And yes, even Rizzi, it could be any one of those six names. And yeah, it'll be very interesting to see.
My thing in this coaching search is, again, the Dolphins are going to have, if they don't get John Harbaugh, again, they're going to have a first-time coach. And that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about having a big-time player with the big-time coach. You know, you don't hear Vic Fangio's name in coaching searches until he gets Khalil Mack, and the Bears have one of the best defenses in the NFL. And I think I'm on the Lewis Riddick train here. I think the Bears could play for a Super Bowl this year because I really, really like Mitch Trubisky. I just really wanted to get on the record and say that somewhere so people can remember that. I said that first.
And then you look at
Eric Bieniemy. Yep, we're going to get this. We're going
to
get this.
I used to see him in college a lot. I used to watch him when he was at Colorado in college. I used to watch him a lot. So yeah, I know him a little bit.
Yeah, he's a hard nosed guy. He can get right to the players, and I'm all for that. I think I like him a little bit more than Vangio in that sense. But you know, he's offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs, who had Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, and Kareem Hunt, and Travis Kelce. Those great players came through the draft. You know, and he doesn't even call plays. So I'm worried about all those things. And I think, okay, now Stephen Ross signaled for this rebuild and he signaled for this new approach. And it doesn't look like a new approach at all if you keep Chris Greer, who's been in your franchise for 19 years, to make all the decisions now. And then you keep Dan Rizzi, who's been a coach on your team for 10 years, who's outlasted the last four coaches, to be your head coach. I don't know how much of a different approach that is. But I do think, if you have those two guys in charge, hear me out now, you have people that really saw the mistake this franchise made over the last couple of years, and you have two people that can probably make the changes for it. Darren Rizzi is a high-energy guy. We know who game day Rizzi is. There's a reason why the players respond to a coach like that. He's charismatic. You guys probably don't see it because, you know, he's not the one that's doing all the interviews every single time. But when the Dolphins writers talk to him every week, he's so excited to talk to us. I don't think that'll continue if he ever becomes a head coach, but he's got a lot of charisma. Players love playing for him. You see it from guys like Jason Taylor. Jason Taylor had the biggest endorsement for him today. Brian Hartline had one today. Reggie Bush had one today.
Mike Pouncey.
All the coaches, Pouncey, you know, even Devon Gutchuk, some players on the team, Jakeem Grant, players who
Michael Thomas, I saw him. Yeah,
the names keep coming in, and it's been every last couple of days, it's been a new one that's kind of, you know, been towards that. And I kind of don't agree with you in a sense that why shouldn't the players make a decision, because these guys are going to have to play for this guy. Yeah. And if they want to play for him already, what do you think, you know, that kind of has some bearing to some weight into it. And then I think for Darren Rizzi too, let's not forget that, you know, he's been in the franchise for 10 years, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have connections around the league. These coaches, they know each other. They get in touch with each other. They run into each other a lot more often than we know. And this, you know, for Rizzi, he knows that what he was doing under Adam Gase probably fits him the best if he were to be a head coach, because he's in charge of, you know, challenging the plays on the field. He's in charge of special teams, personnel groupings. There's times where he even leads team meetings under Gase. So he already has a command of the players. And I think for him, you know, hiring an offensive coordinator, hiring a defensive coordinator, for him, it's a best pitch because you have a guy. If you're an OC or a DC interviewing for Darren Rizzi, you're going to immediately want to work for that guy.
And then you're going to have control. Yeah, because
You'll have control of what you're doing, and that's probably best for them. And then Rizzi can fall back and say, you know what, I'm overseeing anything. Here's my overall input for you, OC. Here's my overall input for you, DC. Let's all make it work. And maybe that seems like a good recipe, but, you know, Rizzi, you know, he's championing for special team coaches. Look at John Harbaugh. Look at Bill Belichick. Those two guys kind of start off as special team coaches, having the oversight of being a coach in that sense. And who's to know if Darren Rizzi ain't the next one, and God forbid he's been on the staff for 10 years and he's your next head coach to help you to the promised land. That would be a success story all in itself.
Absolutely would be, because he has survived every coaching change and he's still here. Last question for you here as we wrap up. I'm going to throw you a few names and just sort of, I won't hold you to it because it is only January 3rd and we really don't know who the head coach is and where we're going. Just a few names. And if you think they'll be back next year or not, Josh Sitton.
No.
Robert Quinn.
Yes, because there's not that many options out there.
Yeah. Frank Gore.
Ooh, this is a tough one because my heart says yes.
Yeah. I'm saying yes too.
My heart says yes, and then I kind of wonder, you know, if Kenyon Drake is a player that they part with in this quote unquote rebuild, I think you bring Gore back for a year. But also, I don't think he wants to play on a losing team. I think he wants to play for a winner.
That's true. That's true too.
But he wouldn't have come to the Dolphins in the first place if he wanted to play for a winner, you know. Yeah. So I don't think he'd mind ending his career in Miami one more year.
Yeah, TJ McDonald or Rashad Jones, which one stays, which one goes? Because I think one's going to stay, and I think one's going to go.
I think if one did stay, it would be Rashad Jones because his contract is a lot to unload. Yep. I think TJ McDonald's contract is pretty easy to keep. I'd say you could keep both those guys in a rebuild unless you're able to get a good draft pick.
How about Amendola?
Danny Amendola. Ooh.
A little bit older.
Can the Dolphins drop their leading receiver after a year?
Well, if you're getting back Grant and Wilson healthy, and if you plan on holding on to Stills, you could make a case you could. And then you're just parting with Parker, who I'm not even going to ask you about because he's gone, and Amendola. The only reason I ask about him, because if you take Ross, what he said at his press conference there on what day was it, Monday, saying he wants to move on from signing these older type guys, it would be a logical cut someone here who is a little bit older and try to, you know, work at some younger guys maybe at wide receiver. That's why I brought him up.
I don't think Danny Amendola would be opposed to that either.
I think he might want to win.
The season was a little rough for him.
And last name I'll give you is Kiko Alonso.
Kiko's an interesting one here on this list because of that whole quote-unquote rebuild. Or, you know, I like saying quote-unquote rebuild, but the fact is the Dolphins never really said that word.
Exactly.
They did hint to it, though.
And we're not quite sure what they're going to do, really. I mean, they say one thing, but until they get the head coach in place, we really don't know. Because if they get someone like John Harbaugh, you know, it might be, we're going to rebuild, but, you know what I mean? It might be one of them.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with Harbaugh, too, it's kind of one of those things where do you want to get take a quarterback now? Do you really want to get to 3 or 4 wins? I mean, if Harbaugh signs another deal or he coaches out his contract, you know, that's probably something in line already for Jim or John.
Yeah.
Maybe through the back channels there. But Kiko Alonso, if you're doing a rebuild, I think he could be gone. And I think another player I like, James Burgess, who signed a Fugis contract with the team. He played some for the Browns or the Bengals, I believe, the last 2 years. Kid out of Louisville. I think he'd probably be a good player to probably fit into that mix there and would help the Dolphins in their case.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, there's so many names. You got guys, someone like Andre Branch, who I think is probably gone, which I didn't even put him on the list. And Parker, like I said, I think there's some names that you sort of know. There's probably no chance they're back, but there's going to be a lot of interesting calls on some of these names because, you know, if they are going to try to build towards the future. Some of these guys who are a little bit older, make a lot of money, you know, you might want to part on from is if you can get the same type of production from someone younger and cheaper. So it's going to be interesting, to say the least, these next few weeks and months. Safid, thanks so much for your time tonight. Everyone, be sure to read the work of Safid Dean at the Sun Sentinel, along with Omar Kelly and David Hyde. They do great work. So everyone check them out and follow Safid Dean on Twitter at Safid_Dean. Safid, thanks so much. And I'm sure we'll talk to you again down the road.
All right, Mike, it was a pleasure doing this as always, man.
Always. You have a good one.
You too, man.
Bye-bye.
The DolphinsTalk.com podcast network brings you only the best podcasts covering the Miami Dolphins. With fins up, fans down, welcome to Perfectville, the same old Dolphins show, the Landon and Jeff show, as well as DolphinsTalk.com daily podcast. You will get in-depth coverage from diehard, passionate Miami Dolphins fans each and every week. Be sure to listen to all these great podcasts and check them out at DolphinsTalk.com.
Once again, I would like to thank Safid Dean from the Sun Sentinel for joining us here today on the podcast. Everyone, be sure to read his work at the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Now, we'll probably have another show. I know for sure we'll have a show Sunday night. Myself and Tom have already spoken about that, and we will be recording. If any big news breaks, we'll probably have a show in between now and then. Of course, there's going to be we have a ton of podcasts up on our website right now. We have a new Landon and Jeff show. We have a new show from Two Old Dolphins, one of the newest podcasts we have here on the website, as well as the same old Dolphin show. So we have a ton of audio up on the website. And of course, when news breaks, I will do breaking news audio and get a show up as quickly as possible. But for sure, we'll have a show Sunday night. And if anything happens Friday or Saturday, then we'll probably jump in and do something then. Everyone, be sure to check out the website, DolphinsTalk.com. We have a bunch of new articles and videos up. Young Mayo recently did a video for us for the 2018 Jerome Baker highlights. It's a great video. You're going to want to check that out. And we just have so many articles and new commentary stuff up. You're going to want to check all of that out. Of course, follow me on Twitter at DolphinsTalk. If you want to send me an email, I can be reached at DolphinsTalk1977@gmail.com. And wherever you're listening to this podcast, whether it's on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, TuneIn, Stitcher, we're on all of them. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it on whatever platform. So as soon as a new show drops, it goes right to your smart device. So everyone, have a great rest of your Thursday, and we'll talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.